Today is the very auspicious celebration of the appearance of Srila Advaita Acharya. By Srila Prabhupada's kind mercy, he has sent His Holiness Jaya Advaita Maharaj to give his auspicious blessings to all of us. In the material world, people have the nature where they want to be the proprietor, the enjoyer, and the controller. But when we come to the level of Vaishnavism, we aspire to become beggars. Begging for the mercy of the Lord and His devotees. As long as we think we're great, we are very small in the eyes of God, and we are spiritually stricken with poverty. When we assume the sentiment of a helpless beggar, then we receive the unlimited treasures of the spiritual world. To teach us this sacred principle, the Supreme Lord descends into this world again and again. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanarataya sambhavami yuge yuge. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to appear as the Yuga Avatar in this age of Kali, he sent his eternal associates and his divine expansions to this world to prepare for his mission and assist him. Srila Advaita Acharya appeared as the son of Kubera Pandit and Nabi Devi in the village of Navagram. He was the incarnation of both Sadashiva and Karunodakshayi Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. We know that Mahavishnu is the original cause of the material creation. Through his exhalation, all the universes are created, and through his inhalation, they all enter into his body and remain in a dormant state. Sri Mahavishnu appeared in the role of the most humble, sincere, and surrendered servant of the supreme cause of all causes, the original fountainhead of all incarnations, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He preached the path of pure, unalloyed devotional service. However, seeing the false pride that was victimizing the people of Kali Yuga, he understood that only if the original form of Krishna comes to this world could he induce people to take to the process of the Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. With this vow in his heart, he decided to make Krishna appear, because he knew that Krishna cannot refuse the helpless cries of his devotees. on the bank of the holy river Ganges, Srila Advaita Prabhu worshipped Krishna in the form of Shalagram Srila with Ganges water and tulasi leaves. With tears of compassion in his eyes, he cried out in a very loud voice, begging for Krishna to descend to give his love to his lost children. Again and again he cried. Meanwhile, devotees like Srivas Thakur were holding kirtan in his home with the same prayer in mind. Advaitacharya is the very embodiment of compassion to the suffering souls who are forgetful of Krishna. In Navadvipa at the time, people were incredibly prosperous. There was immense wealth. There was also such happy life by material standards. It was the high seat of learning in the whole world. There were great scholars gathering from all directions. People were studying the holy scriptures. There was extravagant marriages and other such mundane festivals. But yet, Advaitacharya felt such pity because they were bereft of the treasure of love of Krishna. Therefore, as far as he was concerned, they were all in the most miserable condition of suffering. And the worst kind of suffering is when you think you're happy. At least when you know you're miserable, there's some hope that you can turn to God. He saw this was the condition of Navadvipa. What to speak of the rest of the world, drowning in the ocean of the defects of Kali Yuga. It was in this spirit that on behalf of all conditioned souls for all time in this age of Kali, including all of us today, it was out of his love and mercy to you and me that he cried out for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come. And in answer to his calls, the Lord appeared. On the full moon night of the month of Phalgun in Srimayapur Dham, Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki Jai. Srila Advaitacharya, when he heard of the appearance of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually he didn't hear about it. He and Haridas Thakur were in Shantipur, and they just saw how everyone was chanting during this lunar eclipse. And they felt in their hearts an ecstasy which was unprecedented. They saw all auspiciousness everywhere in the atmosphere. They were convinced, without doubt, that our prayer has been answered. The Lord has appeared. And in great ecstasy, Haridas Thakur and Sri Advaitacharya danced and danced and danced while chanting Krishna's holy name. He sent his beloved consort, Sita Thakurani, to bring gifts to the child. But by the Lord's Yogamaya potency, all the devotees forgot everything about this experience and were not able to recognize their worshipful Lord living amongst them. Now, Nimai Pandit was so very attractive that they loved him just like they loved Krishna. But because at that time he was always speaking mundane subject matters, Advaitacharya with the other devotees would go to the bank of the Ganges and pray to Lord Krishna, "Please make Nimai Pandit a Vaishnav. He can make the whole world chant the holy names." When Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu returned from Gaya, he manifested the Sankirtan movement. Srila Advaitacharya was one of his most formidable generals. He is declared to be the greatest of all the devotees of the Lord. He was the leader amongst all the Vaishnavas and Brahmins. Lord Chaitanya worshipped Advaitacharya as he would worship his own spiritual master, because he was a godbrother of his spiritual master. However, Advaitacharya did not like this. Devotees actually hate to be honored. If you try to honor a devotee, they just want to serve. They just want to be a servant. And whatever honor they may be given, they just want to give it to somebody who deserves the honor. That is their heart. So there were so many beautiful transcendental pastimes recorded in the biography of the Lord, which describes how Advaitacharya tried to somehow or other, by hook, crook, or trick, induce Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept him as a servant, even to the extent of preaching Mayavad philosophy, knowing that that was one thing the Lord could not tolerate. And when the Lord beat him, Advaitacharya was in bliss. "You have accepted me as your servant. You don't beat your master, you beat your servant." Just as Sri Advaitacharya's prayers invited Lord Chaitanya to appear in this world, similarly, when Sri Advaita sent a very, very mystical poem to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya understood, "I have completed my duties as the Yuga Avatar. Just as Advaita has sent for me, now he is sending me back to my eternal abode." By the mercy of Sri Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya came, and with him he brought his most confidential associates from the spiritual world. Today we're going to speak, by the request of the devotees, on Srila Sanatan Goswami. What can a conditioned neophyte devotee speak about such an exalted and worshipable acharya? But it is our duty, for the purification of our heart, to make some feeble attempt to explain perhaps a drop from the ocean of the glories of the Lord's personal and beloved associates. In the spiritual world, Sri Sri Radha Krishna are eternally being worshipped by the Sakis, headed by Lalita and Vishakha, and their immediate assistants are the Manjaris. The two leading Manjaris are Rupa Manjari, who is Srila Rupa Goswami, and Rati or Labanga Manjari, who descended as Srila Sanatana Goswami. He appeared in the gotra of Bharat Raj Muni, the son of Kumaradev. He was the eldest brother. Rupa Goswami was his younger brother, and Ballabha, who was later named by Lord Chaitanya Anupam, was a younger brother. These three brothers, from their very birth, their hearts were filled with such ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Sanatana Goswami, it is said that previously their names were Amara and Santosh, but for convenience we will call him Sanatana Goswami through the narration. When Sanatan was young, he had a dream. In this dream, a very effulgent Brahman appeared to him, offered him as a gift the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sanatana Goswami was in such ecstasy to receive this benediction. Then he woke up. He looked around. He saw he didn't have Srimad Bhagavatam. He was in terrible lamentation. Later that morning, the same Brahmin that appeared in the dream came to his door with the gift of Srimad Bhagavatam. From that day on, Srila Sanatana Goswami was always sinking deeper and deeper and deeper in the ocean of ecstatic love while reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It became his very life and soul. Every aspect of his life was simply revolved around hearing and chanting the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were so qualified. They were illustrious scholars of the Sanskrit language. They also mastered Bengali language, Persian language. They were so well behaved that they attracted the hearts of everyone they came in contact with. They were really and truly leaders who commanded respect. Although very humble and gentle, people simply wanted to worship them and follow them by their benevolent qualities. The expert advisors of the then king of Bengal, the Nawab Hussein Shah, informed him that if you can get these two first-class Hindu Brahmins to be your ministers, then you will have control over all of the Hindu population. The Nawab Hussein Shah approached Rupa and Sanatan with their brother Anupam and ordered them to take the posts of the prime ministers of his kingdom. And if they did not, he would not only persecute them, but he would have rampant persecution of the entire Hindu population. It was out of compassion and fear that harm would be done to the innocent that Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis accepted the posts of the Prime Minister and Finance and Home Minister of the Kingdom of Bengal. Nawab Hussein Shah was so pleased with their incredible qualifications and how they were literally running the whole state he didn't concern himself so much with ruling the citizens. He was more concerned with the aspect of exploitation and conquering others. He left the rest to Rupa and Sanatana. He was so pleased with them that literally he divided his kingdom and his wealth with them. He gave them massive treasures, built magnificent palaces for them, offered them grand estates, and treated them just like his own younger brothers. Although the Nawab Hussein Shah was such a cruel, merciless, meat-eating killer, Srinivasacharya explains, dhira dhira, that the six Goswamis, they were so charming and kind to every living entity that even the demons would become attracted to embrace them like a brother. He gave them the very exalted titles of Dabir Khas to Rupa Goswami and Sakar Malik to Sanatan Goswami. Sort of a perverted reflection of initiation. This is not an ordinary thing for a Muslim king at that time to give a Hindu Muslim names, even though they were still practicing their Vedantic faith. Was a very, very great and rare honor. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, they were such great scholars, constantly immersed in glorifying Radha and Krishna and speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, they created facilities so that Vaishnavas and scholars from all over the country would come to the village of Ramakeli, where they were living, to glorify Radha and Krishna. They built an auditorium where musicians, poets, dancers, and all sorts of other cultured people would come to perform. Scholars came from all directions just to hear Rupa and Sanatan Goswami speak from the holy scriptures. In fact, if a scholar wanted to write a book on the Nyaya philosophy, it would not be accepted unless it was approved by Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. When these Brahmins would come, Rupa and Sanatan would arrange housing for them. With their wealth, they built beautiful little houses on the bank of the Ganges in Ramkeli. And when people would come, with great humility, they would welcome them and serve them. It is explained that Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, when they would sit in their court, they looked just like Indra, surrounded by a host of pundits. And while sitting in their raised platform in such a beautiful aristocratic way, their beauty was so charming that it melted the hearts of anyone who saw them. And they were continually smiling sweetly on everyone who came. They astonished both the citizens as well as all the guests that came. Because although they were in the highest positions, with folded hands, they would beg everyone for the blessing that they could attain pure devotional service to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And they would very humbly and enthusiastically accept the position of servant. They were born in Saraswat Brahmin families from Karnataka, and they were very much exalted in all of their personal qualities, but yet they considered themselves to be lower than the straw in the street. As householders, they were very, very charitable. With whatever they had, they would give in charity to the Brahmins, to the Vaishnavas, to the poor, to the sick. And it is explained that although in very, very high government positions, they never caused harm to anyone, and never in their lives did they ever insult anyone. The spiritual master of Sanatana Goswami was a great learned devotee of the name Vidya Vachaspati. He would oftentimes come to Ramakeli and spend long durations of time. Sanatana Goswami learned all the Vedas from Vidya Vachaspati. The respect and love that Sanatana Goswami had for his spiritual master knew no bounds. Always eager to serve his guru. Always so enthusiastic to hear from him. In fact, Srila Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled the Dasamatipani, he offers his prostrated obeisances and his surrendered devotion to his spiritual master, Srila Vidya Vachaspati. Rupan Sanatana Goswami, living in Ramakeli, they constructed a beautiful garden which they called Kadamba Kanana. They tried to make this garden a replica of Vrindavan. They excavated Radha Kund, Shama Kund. They planted auspicious trees of Vrindavan like Kadamba. In their personal time, they would spend in this garden, constantly immersed in meditating on Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And they would continuously cry in separation. They installed a deity named Madan Mohan in Ramakeli. Their whole lives were centered around the worship and glorification of Sri Sri Madan Mohan. Sanatana Goswami also wrote a very celebrated book, Sadachara Padahati, which describes how to achieve the ultimate perfection of life through devotional service to Sri Krishna. One night, Sanatana Goswami had a very historical dream. A beautiful, effulgent renunciate appeared to him. This renunciate was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami immediately felt his heart overflow with pure unalloyed love and devotion. This renounced person told him, "Do not become too much attached or entangled in this materialistic life. You should go to Vrindavan excavate the holy places and write Vaishnav literatures extolling the glories of pure devotional service. The dream ended. The next morning he went to his brother Rupa Goswami and told him about the dream. Rupa Goswami explained to him that, yes, I know. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is living within this world. I know it. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should surrender to Him. From that day on, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were eagerly awaiting that moment when they could surrender to their lives to Lord Chaitanya. They were feeling themselves so shameful that they were serving a violent, cruel, materialistic king. Therefore, they regretted their position. They considered themselves the most lowly and fallen of all souls. In fact, the father of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, he lamented so terribly the position of his sons that he spent his life continuously performing yajnas and begging for atonement for the shameful position of their sons. What a Vaishnav he is. Most parents would be proud of their sons being prime ministers, multi-millionaires, the most influential scholars in all the world. But he was a real father, a Vaishnav father. He considered that they're not serving the Supreme Lord directly. Because they're associating with materialistic people, it is abominable. This is the love of a real parent. Their ultimate desire for their children is that they may have the association of saintly people. Rupa and Sanatan, they were feeling so much shame and regret. They wanted the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. They understood that only He could save us. They approached their beloved mother and asked, "What should we do in our condition?" Mother informed them that you should write Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu letter informing him of your position and your desire. They wrote a letter, but there was no reply. They wrote another letter, but no reply. Again and again and again they were writing letters to the Lord, but there was no reply. Finally, one reply came. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just wrote one paragraph. In this letter, it was stated that if a wife is attached to another man other than her husband, then she should perform her duties very, very carefully, so that the husband does not suspect that she has paramour. But in her heart, she should exclusively meditate on her beloved. Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis understood that the Lord wants us to carry on with our service in the government, awaiting the mercy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always longed to travel to Vrindavan. When he told his devotees he was going, he began his journey, and so many of his devotees came with him. In fact, as he was passing through the roadsides, there were thousands, then hundreds and thousands, and millions of people following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Vrindavan. Meanwhile, Narasinghananda Brahmachari, he had the power of love, where he could meditate on offerings to the Lord, and those offerings would materialize before the eyes of Lord Chaitanya. So he sat in meditation, beautifying the road going to Vrindavan. He made it very wide. He paved it with gold and jewels. He covered it with stemless, soft, fragrant, undying flower petals. He constructed lakes, auspicious trees, and beautiful birds on both sides of the road. And he was literally going one step at a time. And he came out of his meditation, told the devotees, "The Lord will not go to Vrindavan. He will go as far as Kanai Natashala, then he will return." The devotees were astounded. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has longed for years and years to go to Vrindavan. He's on his way to Vrindavan. What could stop the Supreme Personality of Godhead from his desire? But at the same time, Narasinghananda Brahmachari is a very good devotee. They were quite bewildered by this statement. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically went way off the proper route to Vrindavan just to meet Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. He came to the town of Ramakeli. There he was performing his Sankirtan with millions of people in the very capital and residence of the Nawab Hussein Shah, who made very strict, punishable laws against anyone who practiced any other religion but his own in public. Nawab Hussein Shah, when he was informed about this sannyasi who had come with so many followers, he was astounded. He called some of his ministers and servants, asked, "What is this?" They explained. Then he called Keshava Chatri, who was a very great devotee and a servant of the king. He said, "Tell me, who is this sannyasi who has come to our village?" Keshava Chatri understood that the Nawab Hussein Shah was a demon, very violent. So he said, "Actually, he's just a beggar doing madhukari door to door, and he has one or two disciples with him. Don't worry, it's not worth even thinking about him." "Wow, what are you saying? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I can understand this." He made a law that no one should disobey Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if anyone interferes with his Sankirtan, he will be punished. But Rupa and Sanatana understood that the king had a very, very unstable mind. In the middle of the night, they disguised themselves. Incognito, they went to the place where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying. To this very day in Ramkeli, there's a very sacred tree where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with Sri Rupa and Sanatana. First they approached Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Srila Haridas Thakur. They brought them in to the personal presence of Lord Chaitanya. In great humility, both brothers took bunches of straw between their teeth, and each binding a cloth around his neck, they fell down like rods before the Lord. Upon seeing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the two brothers were overwhelmed with joy, and out of humility they began to cry. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to get up and assured them of all good fortune. The two brothers got up, and again taking straw between their teeth, they humbly offered their prayers with folded hands. All glories to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most merciful savior of the fallen souls. All glories to the Supreme Personality. Sir, we belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates and employment are also of the lowest type. Therefore, we cannot introduce ourselves to you. We feel very much ashamed standing here before you. Dear Lord, let us inform you that no one is more sinful than us, nor there is any offender like us. Even if we wanted to mention our sinful activities, we would immediately become ashamed, and what to speak of giving them up. Dear Lord, you have incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. You should consider that in this world there is none so fallen as us. You have delivered the two brothers, Jagai and Madhai, but to deliver them, you did not have to exert yourself very much. The brothers Jagai and Madhai belonged to the Brahmin caste, and their residence was in the holy place of Navadvip. They never served low-class persons, nor were they instruments to abominable activities. Jagai and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. Jagai and Madhai uttered your holy name by way of blaspheming you. Fortunately, that holy name became the cause of their deliverance. We too are millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madhai. We are more degraded, fallen, and sinful than they. Actually, we belong to the caste of meat-eaters because we are servants of meat-eaters. Indeed, our activities are exactly like those of meat-eaters. Because we always associate with such people, we are inimical toward the cows and the Brahmins. The two brothers, Sakar Malik and Dabir Khas, very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. No one within the three worlds is sufficiently powerful to deliver us. You are the only savior of the fallen souls. Therefore, there is no one but you. If you simply deliver us by your transcendental strength, then certainly your name will be known as the savior of the fallen souls. Let us speak one word that is very true. Plainly hear us. O merciful one, there is no other object of mercy within the three worlds but us. We are the most fallen. Therefore, by showing us your mercy is most successful. Let the power of your mercy be exhibited throughout the entire universe. Let us submit one piece of information before you, dear Lord. It is not at all false, but is full of meaning. It is this: if you are not merciful upon us, then it will be very, very difficult to find more suitable candidates for your mercy. We are very depressed at being unfit candidates for your mercy. Yet since we have heard of your transcendental qualities, we are very much attracted to you. Indeed, we are like a dwarf who wants to capture the moon and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joy to have such a fitting master? After hearing this prayer by Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik, Lord Chaitanya said, "My dear two brothers, you are my very old servants. My dear Sakar Malik, from this day on, your name will be changed to Sanatan Goswami. My dear Dabir Khas, your name will be Srila Rupa Goswami. Please, please abandon your humility, for your humbleness is breaking my heart. You have written me several letters showing your humility, and I can understand your transcendental behavior from those letters. Therefore, just in order to teach you, I sent you that one verse. I really had no business coming here to Ramkeli. I came just to see you two brothers. Everyone is asking, why did you go to Ramkeli? No one knows my real intentions. It is very good that you two brothers have come to see me. Now you can go home. You have nothing to fear. Birth after birth, you are my eternal servants. I am sure that Krishna will deliver you very soon." Sanatana Goswami then made an appeal to the Lord that you are going to Vrindavan with so many millions of people. It is better if you go alone or with one or two others, because Vrindavan is a very quiet and lonely forest. You will appreciate it much nicer if you go with a small group. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bid farewell to Sri Rupa and Sanatana. He embraced them and he placed his lotus feet on top of their heads. The next morning, the Lord continued his journey to Vrindavan. Then he came to a place called Kanai Natashala. There, he saw a forest that looked just like Vrindavan, circled by the holy river Ganga. He saw all these hundreds and thousands of people following him, trampling upon the bushes. He thought, what Sanatana Goswami said is correct. I should go to Vrindavan not with huge groups of people. People will just think I'm some sort of a magician coming with all these people just to attract attention. I should follow the advice of Sanatana. Now, I will go back to Puri. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to Puri, the devotees there were very much surprised to see him return. He told them, when I was in Ramkeli, which I went with great difficulty, I met two exalted personalities, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. They are truly the recipients of Krishna's mercy. They have such wealth. They're so learned in the scriptures. They're so powerful and influential young, handsome, and strong. And they're such great scholars. The people are coming from all around just to associate with them. Yet they are so humble that they consider themselves no better than a lowly piece of straw fallen on the street. Due to that humility, it is for certain that Krishna will certainly empower them. And I told them that Krishna will deliver you from this abominable position. Actually, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, their humility was such an integral feature of their lives that it literally attracted the heart of the Lord to bestow upon him his complete causeless mercy. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to instruct the whole world on the importance of the principle of humility through his dearmost and favorite associates, Sri Rupa and Sanatan. Humility is the only quality that attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to teach this principle, the Supreme Lord himself personally appeared as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the role of a devotee, demonstrating unprecedented quality of humility. And he taught that there is no possible way of finding real happiness except through this spirit of humility. The Bhakti Ratnakar declares that this was the message of Lord Chaitanya. But just see how Maya deludes the world. People are trying to find happiness by boasting what I have done, what I will do, and just see what I am doing. People are trying to find happiness by competing and trying to excel others just for name and fame. People are trying to accumulate so much wealth. What does anybody really need? A few rotis and a place to sleep. But we want so much for prestige. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that everything you're looking for your happiness is going to be the very cause of your suffering. Fear and anxiety. If you want real happiness, it is by following in the footsteps of the humble behavior of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his mercy on Rupa and Sanatan. After some time, they decided to resign from government service. They worshipped the deity of Madan Mohan, praying to him, please deliver us from this abominable position and give us the shelter of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami sent a message to Lord Chaitanya, telling him that they both wanted to resign from their service and join him in Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent a message back, saying, I'm just now leaving for Vrindavan, and resign. Srila Rupa Goswami, immediately, he took all of his wealth and put it on boats and sailed to a house where he distributed all of his wealth. Actually, later on he distributed all of it, but he started to distribute it at that time. He and his younger brother Anupam left everything and went to meet Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. Meanwhile, Sanatana Goswami, due to the forces of circumstances, he was unable to leave at that particular time. But he totally lost all interest in serving the government. Therefore, he sent a letter to the king that he was very, very sick and he could not come to do his services. But meanwhile, he stayed home studying Srimad Bhagavatam with great Vaishnavas and scholars. Days, weeks went by. Now Abu Sayyid Shah's kingdom was having great difficulty without Sanatana Goswami. So he sent a doctor, go check him up, see what's wrong with him. The doctor came back, he's in perfect health. He's studying Srimad Bhagavatam in an assembly of Brahmins. Now Abu Sayyid Shah was infuriated. He came to the house of Sanatana Goswami, just walked right in the door. There was Sanatana reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. What are you doing? You have lied to me. You have cheated me. I'm about to go to Orissa to conquer that state. I want you to come with me. Sanatana Goswami said, I will no longer be a part of your activities. You can count on me no longer for any service. The Nawab Hussein Shah was very, very angry. He said, I have treated you like my own brother. Your elder brother is busy going out murdering and killing. He needs you to stay back and take care of the state. If you do not, you will be punished. Sanatana Goswami said, you are the king, representative of God. You can deal with me in any way you please. Now, in a fit of fury, he walked out and ordered Sanatana Goswami to be imprisoned. He was put in jail. Meanwhile, Nawab Hussein Shah went to Orissa with his armies to conquer. Rupa Goswami heard this. He sent a letter to Sanatana Goswami along with 10,000 gold coins that he deposited with a grocer and told him, somehow or other, get out and come meet us in Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya is going to be there. Sanatana Goswami, shackled in prison, spoke to the jailkeeper that, please help me. You are a very religious man and very pious in heart. I want to give up everything of this world and become a religious saint. In fact, I want to go on pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca. If you facilitate me in my mission, then you will get great religious and pious benefits. Here is 5,000 gold coins. Get me out of this prison. The jailkeeper said, yes, I am a pious and religious man, and I want you to go to Mecca. But what would the Nawab Hussein Shah say when he sees that you are gone? He will punish me. Sanatana Goswami told him, no, you just have to tell him this story, that I had to pass stool.
And I went to the bank of the Ganges and jumped in with all my chains and drowned. You looked for me, but I was nowhere to be seen. And here, along with the original 5,000 gold coins, is another 2,000 gold coins. This argument was very convincing. He was released from prison. As he was traveling through the forest and the jungles, he had one servant named Ishan that was assisting him. They came to a hilly tract of land in the state of Bihar, which is called Patada. That place is very, very infamous at the time for thieves and rogues who will kill anyone for anything at a moment's notice. There was a hilly tract of jungle that's very, very difficult to get through. They stopped at an inn. At this inn, the hotel keeper was the leader of the whole band of dacoits. He had an astrologer. This astrologer told him, these two guests, they have 8 gold coins. Ah, 8 gold coins. He was very much eager to kill them. So he treated them with great respect, just to make them comfortable and confident. It is said, too much devotion is the sign of a thief. This applies to this case. Sanatana Goswami, being a government leader, he was diplomatic and he knew the spirit of diplomacy. So he was thinking, why is this man giving me so much respect and serving us so nicely? He must want to rob and kill us. Ishan, do you have any of those gold coins left? He said, yes, I have 7 gold coins. Immediately he took those coins to the innkeeper and said, I have these coins, you keep them. The innkeeper said, oh, what an honest and charitable person you are. Lucky you gave them to me, because I would have killed you on this very day if you didn't. But now that I see you're so honest and so nice, you keep the coins, I don't want them. He said, if you don't kill me for these gold coins, somebody else will kill me. Take them away. But please, I ask only one favor. Help me get through this mountain range. On that morning, the innkeeper personally arranged for Sanatana Goswami to get through that hilly tract. Sanatana Goswami turned to Ishan and asked him, do you have any more gold coins? I have one. You take that gold coin and go home. Why have you brought this death knell with you? Sanatana Goswami was then a fugitive who had just escaped from prison. He was wearing the robes of a prisoner. He was alone and had nothing. He continued his travel till he came to a place called Hajipur. There, his brother-in-law, the man who was married to his sister, who was a government servant, had come to visit. On the command of the local king, He had come with large sums of gold to purchase first-class horses in Hajipur. Sanatana Goswami was sitting, and Srikanta, his brother-in-law's name, had seen him and sent one of his messengers to bring Sanatana. He said, "Look at you. You're all unshaven, and your hair is all scraggly, and you're wearing all torn-up prisoner-like clothes." Sanatana Goswami told him the whole story. He said, "You stay with me for at least 2 days." Sanatana Goswami said, "I will not stay with you for even one moment. I'm going to Vrindavan." But somehow or other, Srikanta would appeal to him with so much affection to at least accept one brand new woolen blanket as a gift. Sanatana Goswami left on that very day. He came to Varanasi. There he heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had already visited Vrindavan, and he was residing at the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya in Varanasi. Sanatana Goswami sat outside of the courtyard of Chandrasekhar. Lord Chaitanya told Chandrasekhar that there is a very great, pure-hearted, saintly Vaishnava outside. Please bring him in to me. Chandrasekhar went out. There he saw Sanatana Goswami sitting. He went back in, told the Lord, "There's no saintly Vaishnava out there. Is anyone out there? There's one Daravesh. There's one very dirty-looking Muslim mendicant. Bring him in immediately. That is who I'm looking for." Chandrasekhar brought Sanatana in. As soon as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him, in great ecstasy, he embraced him, bathing him with his tears of love. Sanatana Goswami, falling at the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, "Please, please do not touch me. I'm filthy. I'm dirty. Not only that, I'm utterly fallen, sinful, and contaminated." Lord Chaitanya said, "I am touching you for my purification." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of his love for his devotee, personally cleaned the body of Sanatana Goswami with his own hands. He then ordered Sanatana Goswami to get shaved up. Chandrasekhar took Sanatana and shaved him, his beard and his hairs. Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to this particular section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, explained that Lord Chaitanya did not like people looking like hippies. After taking his bath, Chandrasekhar gave him fresh new clothes. Sanatana Goswami rejected, "I will not take new clothes." Then he came back to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he was introduced to Tapan Mishra. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would take prasad at the house of Tapan Mishra, and he would stay at the house of Chandrasekhar. So Tapan Mishra, he offered Sanatana Goswami brand new garments. He couldn't tolerate seeing him in such rags. Sanatana Goswami rejected it. He said, "You give me just one old dhoti." So he brought him one of his old dhotis. Sanatana Goswami started ripping it in pieces and used that for loincloth, chadar, and kopan. Hare Krishna.
Then he came and got the personal remnants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A Maharashtrian Brahmin, who was a great devotee of the Lord, invited Sanatana Goswami to come and take prasad at his house every day. Sanatana Goswami said, "No, I will do Madhukari." Each and every day, in the mood of a beggar, he would go house to house begging for a little bit of food. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so very pleased to see the spirit of renunciation of Sanatana Goswami. But one time he looked at the blanket of Sanatana. Hare Krishna. Sanatana Goswami understood, he doesn't like this blanket that my brother-in-law gave me. He went to the bank of the Ganges, and at the bathing ghat there was a mendicant who had an old torn-up quilt that he was washing. Sanatana Goswami said, "I'll give you this very costly new woolen blanket. You give me your old torn quilt." The mendicant said, "What are you saying? Why are you making fun of me just because I'm so poor?" Sanatana said, "No, I'm serious. Take the blanket. Give me your quilt." He came back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya asked, "Where is your blanket?" He said, "I gave it to a mendicant in exchange for this quilt." Lord Chaitanya said, "Very good. Now I can see that you have renounced the last shred of all material attachment. This is very good. What will people think? You're going around like a mendicant Vaishnav doing Madhukari, house to house, asking for alms, and you're wearing such an expensive blanket? People will think you're a hypocrite. It's shameful." By the causeless mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, you have now been delivered from any last attachments to this material world. Sanatana Goswami, he replied, "I do not know who is Krishna, but I know one thing, that it is your causeless mercy that has saved me, and I have no other hope than you." At that time, Sanatana Goswami put straw between his teeth. With folded palms, he bowed down at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he began to inquire. He said, "My Lord, I am from a low family, and all of my associates are of the lowest disposition. I am sinful, and I am addicted to sinful activities. My whole life is abominable. But by your causeless mercy, you have accepted me as your servant. Please, my Lord, please. Please instruct me. I do not know what is my duty. I do not know what is beneficial and what is detrimental for the real purpose of life. And yet, due to the influence of illusion, people are calling me a great learned scholar. And I am such a fool that I accept myself as such. Please tell me, what is my real duty in life? Who am I? Why am I suffering birth after birth the threefold miseries of material existence? How can I be benefited? My Lord, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life from you. Please, out of your mercy, explain these truths to me." Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Sanatan Goswami that your humble quality is breaking my heart. You know all the truths of the conclusions of the Vedas. You are fit to propagate the cult of pure devotional service all over the world. There's nothing that you do not know. But still, it is the nature of a sadhu like you to inquire just for the sake of being strict. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his explanations of Krishna consciousness to Sanatana Goswami. He began by explaining that the spirit soul is constitutionally, by nature, the eternal servant of Krishna. He is the tatashta shakti, or marginal energy, of the Lord. He is simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as a single ray of the sun is non-different in quality than the sun planet, similarly, the spirit soul is of the same quality as the Lord, Satchidananda, but is constitutionally a fragmental, insignificant, tiny part and parcel of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Sanatana Goswami the philosophical truth of a chintya beta beta tattva. He described how the Lord has various energies spreading throughout all of creation, just as the sun is in one place diffusing its sunshine in all directions. Similarly, Krishna, although living in his eternal abode of Goloka Vrindavan, through his multifarious energies is pervading everything that exists. There are three primary energies: the chit sakti, or the eternal spiritual energy; maya shakti, the illusory material energy; and tatastha shakti, the jiva soul. When the jiva soul is covered by the maya shakti, it forgets its original nature and becomes covered by the false ego and thinks that he is himself an enjoyer separate from Krishna. Since time immemorial, the spirit soul has been suffering repeated births and deaths, ignorance of his constitutional nature. And in each birth, he has to suffer the threefold miseries: Adiatmaka, Adidaivaka, and Adibhautika. Due to the power of the three ropes of the modes of material nature, he is influenced to act sometimes pious and sometimes impious. Sometimes he's elevated to the higher planets, and then again he's plunged into the lower planets of misery. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used the example that just as when the king sees a person who is a criminal, he takes his guards and tells them what to do. They take that criminal by the hair and push their head down under water in the river. And when the person is about to suffocate to death, he pulls his head out of the river to get some air. And after enjoying the air for a few seconds only, pushes him again down into the river, where he's suffering terrible suffering. And when he's about to die, he's brought up to enjoy the air. And he's plunged back down. Millions and millions of births were going through the same type of a situation.
suffering the repeated miseries of material existence, and every now and then we're pulled up and we get some breath and we think, oh, how nice life is, only to be plunged down again. However, Lord Chaitanya continued, if one gets by the mercy of Krishna the association of a sadhu, he can be delivered. Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mama vambe prapapadyante mayameta tadantike. This material existence is very, very difficult to overcome. But one who associates with a sadhu and learns the process of surrendering to Krishna can easily cross beyond it. Only the causeless mercy of Krishna can deliver one from ignorance. There is no other means possible. Krishna, out of his mercy, he has compiled the Vedas, and he saves the aspiring soul through three forms: the Vedas, the Guru and the Sadhus, and the super soul within the heart. Through this process we can understand what is Krishna. Lord Chaitanya continued that in the Vedic literatures there are essentially three subject matters discussed. Sambandha, how to re-establish our lost relationship with Krishna. Abhideya, how to act according to that relationship by engaging in the service of the Lord with attachment. And Prayojana, the ultimate goal of life, pure unalloyed love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many different paths by which we can approach spiritual truths. However, the conclusion of all the Vedas is that only through bhakti or devotional service can we know Krishna as he is. He told the story of an astrologer of the name Saravagya who was approached by a very poor, suffering man. The astrologer told him that your father has given you as inheritance a treasure of wealth. He said, where am I to find this wealth? The astrologer explained, if you dig in the southern direction, you will be bitten and stung by innumerable wasps. If you dig in the western direction, you will be harassed by a ghost. If you dig in the northern direction, you will be devoured by a big black serpent. But if you just dig a little bit of ground in the eastern direction, you will find the pot of treasure. Mahaprabhu explained that the path of Karmakanda is like the southern direction. The wasps and bees that will sting you represent all the troubles and sufferings and miseries that come through following the process of Karmakanda. And by following Jnanakanda, our mind becomes terribly disturbed due to all of the mental speculation, just like one is disturbed by a ghost. And the mystic system where one tries to achieve Kaivalya, or merging into the oneness of the Lord, it is like having your personal identity devoured by a serpent. But the eastern direction represents the path of bhakti, where just a little bit of effort and we can find the priceless treasure of Krishna consciousness within our own hearts. The Lord explained how pure devotional service is dormant in the heart of every living entity, and it is awakened only by devotional service. One who takes to the path of bhakti does not want wealth, does not want liberation,
only wants to serve and please the Lord. In the Vedas, there is mention of worship of many great demigods. But Mahaprabhu said that the conclusion of all the Vedas is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all of the demigods are subordinate to His will. He is the center of everything. Krishna is the source of all that exists. His body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarava Karana Karanam. His abode is Goloka Vrindavan. In His eternal abode, the Lord resides with His associates, the cows, the gopas, and the gopis. From Krishna's original form in Goloka Vrindavan, all other incarnations are emanating. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the original cause of all causes, and He is the source of Vishnu and all of the other incarnations. The Brahman effulgence is but the rays of light emanating from the spiritual body of Krishna, and the Paramatma is the localized feature of the Lord, who is the witness of everyone's activities. He divided the various incarnations of the Lord into three categories: Swayam Rupa, or the eternal form of the Lord; Tadikatma Rupa, other forms of Himself directly; and Avesha Rupa, or empowered incarnations. The Lord went into great, great detail of the various categories within these categories of incarnations within this world. He described how the creation of the cosmic manifestation takes place, beginning with the expansion of Lord Krishna, Karano Dakshai Vishnu, who exhales and creates all the various universes, and how by His glance He impregnates each universe with all the living entities who are to exist within them. He explained then how Garbho Dakshai Vishnu appears, and from Him lotus flower is born from His navel, and Brahma is born. He reveals the Vedas to Him. And then from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva appears. He described how Lord Shiva is not a jiva. He is superior to all jivas, because He's actually a personal expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, as milk is turned into yogurt, it is simultaneously milk, but not milk. Similarly, Lord Shiva is eternally Vishnu, but still different from Vishnu. He is the greatest devotee of Vishnu. He is eternally accepting the role of a servant of Vishnu. Within Brahma's lifetime, there were 504,000 manus, and in each manu there are 71 rotations of yuga cycles, and in each yuga the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally incarnates to teach the recommended process of self-realization for that yuga. He is called the Yuga Avatar. In Satya Yuga, the Lord appears in a white complexion to teach the process of meditation. In Treta Yuga, He appears in a red complexion to teach the process of yajna. In Dwapara Yuga, He appears in His beautiful blackish complexion to teach the process of deity worship. In Kali Yuga, He appears with a beautiful golden complexion to teach the Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya quoted the verse, Kalera dosanide rajanastihe kamahan guna kirtana reva krishnasya mukta sangha param brajet. This age of Kali, which is an ocean of faults, there's only one means of deliverance, the chanting of the holy names of
God.
In fact, Mahaprabhu continued, the same results you get through thousands and thousands of years of meditation in Satyayuga, through perfectly performed yajna in Treta Yuga, through the execution, devotional worship of the Lord in Dwapara Yuga, the same result is received in Kali Yuga, simply by the loud congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
Sanatana Goswami then asked the Lord, how do I know who is the Yugavatar for Kali Yuga? Lord Chaitanya said, you must understand these things from the holy scriptures. He began citing various evidences from the scriptures about the qualities of the Yuga Avatar. Sanatana Goswami said, oh, it's like this. He has a beautiful golden complexion. And he's always surrounded by his associates. And he's dancing with his arms raised, singing the glories of the congregational chanting of the holy names. Is that it? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became embarrassed. He said, Sanatan, you are playing tricks on me. He continued by explaining in the original abode of Goloka, Krishna is eternally present. And once in every day of Brahma, he descends to this world. And there he manifests four different ages. His baby and tiny childhood age, which is called Komara Lila. His boyhood, or Poganda. His youthful age, Kaishor, and his developed youthful age, or Yovana. And how Krishna is performing his transcendental pastimes on this earth in Vrindavan for 125 years. He explains how the Vrindavan Leela is the supreme, most perfect. That Krishna is perfect and complete. When he appears in Vaikuntha, he is complete in his perfection. When he appears in Mathura and Dwarka, he is more complete in his perfection. And when he appears as Gopinath in Vrindavan, he is most complete and perfect. He explained how the Vrindavan Leela is so extraordinarily exalted that even Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, was bewildered when he came to Vrindavan to see the incredible loving relationships between Krishna and his friends. In Vaikuntha, the Lord is being worshipped by all living entities with great majestic devotion. But when Brahma came to look down in Vrindavan after Krishna killed the Aghasura, he saw Krishna sitting on bank of Jamuna as an ordinary cowherd boy, just eating the remnants of the cowherd boys. They would all take bites from their laddus and other food and say, oh, this is very nice, try this, Krishna. And Krishna would eat it. Brahma was bewildered. Who is this Krishna? Just to test him, he stole the calves and the boys. And when he returned, he saw that Krishna manifested each form perfectly.
And then each form of Krishna, each little cowherd boy and calf manifested the form of Vishnu.
This is the supreme glory of the position of Vrindavan. Mahaprabhu explained how below Goloka Vrindavan is the Vaikunthas, below Vaikuntha is the Viraja, which is the border between material and spiritual existence. And within material existence there are innumerable universes like mustard seeds in a bag of mustard seeds. And yet the illusion is every living being is thinking that they're the center of the universe. If I'm happy, that everything is very nice. In this regard, Lord Chaitanya told the story of when Lord Brahma came to visit Dwarka. He said to the gatekeeper, "Please tell Krishna that Brahma has come to see him." Krishna says, "Oh, which Brahma?" "The four-headed Brahma." "Tell him to come in." But on his way in, Krishna called so many other Brahmas. Brahma saw 8-headed Brahmas, 16-headed Brahmas, 32-headed Brahmas, 64-headed Brahmas. Some Brahmas had hundreds of heads, some thousands. He even saw a Brahma with millions of heads. He felt utterly insignificant because he only had 4. Because according to the size of the universe, that's how many heads Brahma has. They were all bowing down to Krishna and he said, "I will protect you from all demons. You all go back to your abodes." And little tiny Brahma was the only one left. Offered his worship to the Lord, understanding how before God we are all insignificant. Lord Chaitanya explained the sweetness of Vrindavan, how even Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of Vaikuntha, performed vows to enter into the Leela of Vrindavan. But she was not able to do so. The only way to achieve residence of Vrindavan is through following the 64 principles of devotional service, of which 5 are prominent: associating with devotees, chanting the holy names of the Lord, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, living in a holy place, worshipping Tulsi, and worshipping the deity of the Lord with great devotion. He described how there are different stages of bhakti that one progresses through. Sadhana bhakti, which has 2 parts. Vaidhi bhakti, which means we advance by strictly following rules and regulations. Then there is raga bhakti, where we begin to develop spontaneous devotional service. And through ragatmika bhakti, we ultimately come to bhava bhakti, or serving the Lord with pure unalloyed devotion. And through that, we gradually come to the ultimate perfection of Krishna prema. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by Sanatana Goswami that, "Please, I have heard that you explained the Atmarama verse of Srimad Bhagavatam to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Can you explain it to me as well?" The Atmarama verse teaches that even the greatest, most liberated souls, they are attracted to devotional service to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya explained the Atmarama verse in 61 different ways, with 61 different points of view. He also explained within his explanation the story of Magrari the hunter being delivered by Narada Muni. He taught Sanatana Goswami on the banks of the Ganges, in the holy place of Kashi,
every day, all day, for 2 months.
Then he told Sanatan that whatever I have spoken, you should write books to reveal these truths to the world. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatan Goswami that he was entrusting him with his mission, that he should go to Vrindavan. He should teach what is the behavior of a devotee, what is the duty of a devotee, what is Vaishnav etiquette, what is the behavior of one in the renounced order of life. From all the scriptures you should extract that the essence of all knowledge is pure unalloyed devotional service to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. You should also excavate the holy places and establish temples. Sanatan Goswami then took leave of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As they left, there was great separation in both of their hearts. Sanatan then went to Vrindavan, where he met with Subhuti Rai. Subhuti Rai was a great devotee of the Lord, whose whole life was just to serve all Lord Chaitanya's associates when they came. Subhuti Rai took Sanatan Goswami through the 12 forests of Braja. He offered Sanatan Goswami a place to live, but Sanatan Goswami was so happy living in Vrindavan that by his own free will he decided to live under a different tree each night. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also instructed Sanatan Goswami that in due course of time you should serve my devotees who come from distant places. Because my devotees are generally very poor, they don't have much, just a water pot and some little clothes. You should give them shelter and maintain the Vaishnavas when they come. So Sanatan lived with Subhuti Rai for some time. But he found out that Rupa Goswami had already been there and went to Puri. With Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's permission, Sanatan Goswami then began his journey to Jagannath Puri. He traveled through the Jharikhanda forest all alone. Sometimes he would fast because there was just no food. Sometimes he would get some little bit that he would offer to Krishna and partake. Due to this severe fasting and due to his drinking some contaminated water from one of the ponds of the forest, he contracted a terribly painful skin disease. His entire body had itching sores that were intolerable. And from all of those sores, there was contaminated blood oozing out of them. Sanatan Goswami was thinking that I'm low-born, I'm sinful, and look at my body. It's useless. My life is useless. I'm going to Puri, but I won't be allowed to enter into Jagannath's temple. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lives right close to the temple, and the servants of Jagannath are coming in and out of the temple, I won't even be allowed to see Lord Chaitanya. With this contaminated existence of mine, I won't be able to do any practical service. What is the use of my life? Ah, when I get to Puri, I will have darshan of Jagannath. And at the Rath Yatra,
in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I will throw this wretched body under the wheel of the cart. That will be the most auspicious blessing of my life. Then perhaps I will get a better birth in my next life. With this conviction, he continued on his journey, arrived in Jagannath Puri. He went to the bhajan kutir of Srila Haridas Thakur, which is called Siddha Bakula. When Haridas Thakur met with Sanatan Goswami, they were both in great, great ecstasy to be together once again. If you remember, Haridas Thakur was the person who personally introduced Sanatan Goswami to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Ramakeli. Sanatan Goswami asked Haridas, "Where is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?" Haridas replied, "He comes here every day. In fact, he should be here any moment. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared right at that time." They both offered their prostrated obeisances. Lord Chaitanya picked up Haridas and embraced him. Haridas said, "Laying here at your lotus feet is your beloved Sanatan Goswami." Sanatan got up. Lord Chaitanya went to embrace him. Sanatan said, "No, I am the lowest of the low. Please, please, do not touch me. My body is contaminated." Lord Chaitanya, by force, embraced Sanatan Goswami. As he embraced him, all over his body, the oozing blood smeared on the beautiful golden form of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. This was terribly embarrassing to Sanatana Goswami. Lord Chaitanya inquired, "How are you, Sanatana?" He replied, "Everything is auspicious because I am seeing you, my Lord." Lord Chaitanya inquired, "You are coming from Mathura? How are the devotees in Mathura?" That was discussed. Lord Chaitanya said, "Rupa Goswami was just here. He stayed here in Puri for 10 months. Just 10 days ago, he left. He informed me of the news that your younger brother, Anupam, is dead." Sanatan Goswami explained how my brother Anupam was such a great devotee of Lord Sri Ramchandra. Rupa Goswami and myself, we would tell him day and night the pastimes and teachings of Krishna. One day we said that Krishna's Leela is the sweetest of the sweet. Krishna's beauty is unparalleled. You should join us and take the mantra of Krishna. Anupam said to us, "I cannot refuse you. You can give me the mantra." The next morning he approached us, weeping and crying. He said, "Last night I tried to chant the name of Krishna, but the only thing that I could think of in my mind was my worshipable Lord Sri Ramchandra. I cannot give up his devotion. Let anything happen in my life, but please do not take me away from my service to Sri Ramchandra. It is impossible for me." Sanatana said, "We embraced him, congratulated him for his chastity, for his worshipable Lord, and told him, 'We only said these things just to test you. We are very pleased.'" Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Anupam has attained the supreme abode of Lord Sri Ram. Similarly, Murari Gupta was like that, and I also congratulated him. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana that you and Haridas Thakur
are both experts in relishing the rasas of Krishna's lila. You should remain here with Haridas Thakur and constantly hear the glories of the Lord, and with Thakur Haridas chant the holy names.